Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. This is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And you know, Julie, we have some pretty sharp dressers here at How Stuff Works,
but nobody
here is accessorizing today like we are.
No.
Can you explain this this blue dolphin-y outfit that you're wearing today?
Well, it's kind of shimmery, mm-hmm. first of all, and it's got all sorts of zippers on it.
Yeah.
It's like very 80s, you know, with kind of a throwback to a motorcycle jacket.
Gotcha.
And then I've got this fabulous fin at the bottom. And in fact, it's this fin that can propel me through the water like twice as fast as Michael Phelps.
Wow. How'd you drive to work in that?
You know, just carefully.
Yeah.
I've got a stick shift, so it was just kind of stop and go and lots of honking, but you know, it's completely worth it.
Wow. Well, it looks pretty sharp. Almost as sharp as what I'm wearing, which is a wingsuit. I did not fly to work because you actually have to have really significant skydiving experience to jump out of a plane in one of these, but it looks pretty sharp. I mean,
right.
I have this awesome webbing underneath each of my arms. The webbing that goes down between my legs is a little less awesome because it makes me kind of have to walk like a penguin.
Right.
Which can be a little awkward on MARTA. So I think a few people may have missed the train this morning because of me. If you're listening, I apologize. But if I was to fall off a cliff in this thing, I would stand a really good chance of not dying quite as fast.
Yeah. And you would kind of look like, you know, Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
With a sort of Bobby Brown wingsuit.
Yeah.
Is what I'm looking at right now.
I like the idea of the Bobby Brown wingsuit.
Yeah.
He's not doing anything right now. He can get behind this product.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's his prerogative.
So we are talking about accessorizing not just the human wardrobe, but the human form.
That's right. Not content just to be human.
Right. And we've been doing this for a while. I mean, clothing itself is basically an accessory to the human form. Like, hair's not cutting it, throw some clothing on there, get some hair from another animal to augment what we've got going on. And suddenly you can you can go a little farther north or a little farther south to forage for food, right?
That's right. Exactly. I mean, it's crazy the amount of accessorizing we do.
Well, our kitchen is kind of an accessory. I've heard this argument that it's basically an external stomach that we've created to cook food, and or even just a campfire is kind of an external stomach in a certain sense.
Wow, to like house our food.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and it makes it more digestible and does the work that our stomach cannot or, you know, will not.
Yeah. I think it's pretty fascinating the ways that we've tried to manipulate our form. And I even think about the Wright brothers, which, mm-hmm. you know, of course we're landlubbers. We can't fly, but that didn't stop them.
Yeah. Or the just countless people just for centuries beforehand that tried and generally died or were horribly injured when they fell off of something with wings strapped to them.
Right.
Yeah.
I can fly.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a couple of really good articles on that. We have a top 10 early attempts at flight article on HowStuffWorks.com worth checking out that details some of these more disastrous attempts. And I wrote a short one, like what was the first attempt to fly, that also goes into some of these just comic but also horrible accidents of early attempts at human flight.
That's right. But I like the way that you put what we're talking about today. It was basically like humans trying to Mr. Potato Head themselves.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the potato in itself. It's not, you know, doing much, but, you know, throw some eyes on there, throw some teeth on there. You know, the human form, it's not going to excel in the water like a dolphin. It's not going to sail like a bird. So we end up...
It's not going to sting like a bee.
Yeah, it's not going to sting like a bee. So we kind of... I couldn't help but think of like a classroom containing all the varied forms that natural selection has generated over millions of years. And imagine like the human sitting there and kind of like looking over to cheat off of somebody else's sheet, because we're cheating off of the work that in some of these more biomimetic, mimicking biology,
right,
forms. We're basically kind of cheating off of their work. You know, their natural selection has been pushing this design and fine tuning this design for ages, and we're just kind of like, you know, looking over, seeing what they're doing and copying it to our own for our own purposes.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the dolphin fins.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into the dolphin fins.
Yeah, then. Yeah.
Where is this coming from?
Like where symbolically, or who came up with this great idea?
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Okay, Ted Ciamillo. Mm-hmm. Who is an inventor, basically studied the dolphin form and said, okay, that is really cool that dolphins use something like 80% of their energy and convert it into thrust, whereas us humans are pretty lousy in the water, and we can only convert 4% of our energy into forward motion. So basically, when we get into the water, it's just it's kind of an awkward experience if you think about it.
Yeah, like apparently, even if we put on swim fins, right, flippers, we're only just getting like, what, 10 to 15% more efficient.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And we're still kind of just trudging through the water. Mm-hmm. Even if we look really elegant like Michael Phelps, which I know that when I swim, I look really elegant like him, it's still not the best way to make our way through that sort of viscous material, I guess you could say. So this guy, Ciamillo, great, totally interesting guy. He decides that he's going to create a 2.5-pound fin, and this is made by his company called Lunaset.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like a piece of foam, and it's got a really big span. So it allows you to now go twice as fast as Michael Phelps in the water.
It's kind of like a mermaid flipper, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so the really cool thing about this, too, is that he envisions that eventually, and they've been messing around with this, that you can breach completely out of the water like a dolphin.
you need to actually jump up into the air.
Yes. Like SeaWorld style.
Yeah.
Which then I start to think, of course, well, are they going to replace the dolphins with humans breaching the water?
Oh, man. And then you'll be able to go, you'll be out in California, you'll be able to take tour boats out to watch. Like the crazy dolphin people, like,
yes,
coming up to the side of the boat and like, you know, following the boat like they do and jumping out of the water. And,
exactly. Although I still think the humans might be fired. I feel like they won't be able to do the tricks as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
What they can do is they can have those guys, like the dolphin people, hanging out in the back of the boat. And if they start freaking out, it's like, oh my goodness, we're not seeing any whales, we're not seeing any dolphins. They're like, call those guys in. We're not sending these people back disappointed.
I like that. I want to ride the human. Me. Well, CML also is envisioning this hydro-touring aspect of it, too, which is basically that you get a group of people who have these fins on and they can go really long distances throughout the day. They've got waterproof gear, backpacks, and they can basically just go and hang out in the oceans as long as they want and tour around. And, of course, that makes me think of, like, these marauding gangs.
Oh, well, see, I had a much more optimistic view of it. I was thinking, like, sort of wandering hippies of the sea, you know? Especially since this guy that comes from Athens, Georgia, which, I mean, granted, has the whole, like, football side of it, but then there's also kind of like a hippie, you know,
music
incompatible with the world outside of Athens quality to Athens. I mean, I love Athens, but I can't help but think of the Patton Oswalt quote that it's one of those places where people, like, leave Athens, and then they're like, what? You can't pay for a meal with a song in this town, you know?
So it's true. It does have its own little special bubble of reality to it. So it makes sense that it produced this guy.
Yeah, totally. So, but yeah, indeed, whether we're talking, you know, your vision of, you know, marauding, you know, Hell's Angels with flippers.
Yeah. Can't you just see them going up to the snorkelers, like the tourists who are all snorkeling and just start jabbing them and, you know, running away really quickly or swimming away.
Yeah. What with like the bottlenose that they wear over their mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. That along with like a Nixon mask.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. I can sort of, like the hippie idea a little better, but I mean, either way, they would be heading out to like a local little island with their sack full of like, with their cell phone and their GPS system and some
peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah. Unless they're really into it. Maybe they start only eating like, you know, like raw fish.
Oh, like they just really embrace it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they start spearing their fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could create an entire community out of this. This doesn't have to be like a day trip. This could be a way of life.
Indeed.
Yeah. But this guy, Ciamillo, he also created a human-powered submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he's actually used it to cross the Atlantic, but I know that he's planning to. And it, too, has biomimicry in it. It's got a foil like a dolphin's tail.
Okay. Now, how many humans does he have to enslave to power it for him?
You know what? This is the good news. Just one. Just himself.
Oh, okay. That's a lot more optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. And design. I mean, okay. I can't quite get my head around it because it's 5,600 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been explained like a Stairmaster crossed with a cross-country ski machine. And the arm and leg drive system is linked to the flapping tail through a system of pulleys.
Okay.
And that seems really exhausting to me.
Yeah. I really hope that the inventor is not out there right now on the bottom of the ocean in this thing.
No, I know.
Yeah.
That would be awful. But I knew that he was planning it for like his 40th birthday or to celebrate his 40th year. And here's a quote on his website. He said, "I want to spend time out on the open ocean in something I built with my own hands, pondering my own existence."
So obviously the only way to really achieve that is to build a personal submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
Don't rent a boat.
Yeah.
And start navel gazing. You just have to create your own power-pedaled submarine.
Well, we're making fun of it a little, but it is kind of, I mean, it's
no,
an awesome
idea. It's really, yeah. I'm making fun of it because it's so cool. Mm-hmm. I want one of my own, and I wish I had the own, that sort of initiative to be like, you know, I want to ponder in the best way I can ponder in the middle of the ocean, and I'm going to make that happen for me.
Cool. It also reminds me that we do have an article on the site about whether a giant squid could take down a submarine or not.
Well, I mean, we haven't even discussed rogue waves.
Yeah, rogue waves. Yeah.
I mean, that could take you down in an
instant. Or, you know, side stitches. I think that could really sink you in this particular device.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even thought about that. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you can't eat your peanut butter and jelly sandwich then. You definitely would have to take breaks. So that's one way that we're trying to look over at our classmate, the dolphin, and say, what's going on with you and your design, which I think is pretty cool that we're trying to co-op.
Cool.
As long as we don't do any, you know, crazy damage in our marauding gangs.
Yeah, indeed. Well, while our marauding Lunasat wares are busy in the ocean, in the air we have people wearing wingsuits like I'm wearing today, and these are pretty awesome. Recently, there've been a couple of, they kind of pop up in the news. I guess like wingsuits are one of those things that the economy doesn't really hurt because there are always going to be crazy people that want to jump out of an airplane and sort of fly for a little bit.
Right.
Well, I mean, well, they fly, but.
And if you've got that kind of discretionary income, you're probably not too badly hurt by the economy.
Because recently in the news, and both of these relate to the Red Bull skydiving team, which
of
is basically a wingsuit with a bunch of Red Bull logos on it. And they're not like wearing a Red Bull can mascot outfit or anything.
They don't have what attached to their head with a straw coming down.
No. But there's a guy named Valery Rozov, and he's a Russian, and he recently glided for 45 seconds when he jumped off of Olvatana Mountain in Antarctica, and that's a 9,616-foot peak. Yeah, so there's video of that online. It's worth checking out. It's extremely terrifying because even though you kind of, well, on YouTube, I guess all bets are off. But I figured he probably wasn't going to crash into the side of the mountain and die horribly. But you kind of don't know when you watch this this film because he's pretty close to the side.
Well, and I think it's fascinating that it's not enough just to fly through the air. It's to try to get as close to the mountain or the cliff as possible. I mean, isn't that sort of part of the whole wingsuit thing if you're an enthusiast?
With the base jumpers, I think it just kind of comes with the territory because, you know, you're jumping off of a mountain. You're not going to necessarily get that much distance. But plenty of these guys do it also just, you know, out of planes. And it's all about, that seems to be just all about soaring as far as possible, over when watching the mountains and stuff just pass underneath you.
Right.
So I think there are different schools of thought on it. But the other news item related to the Red Bull skydiving team, last month or so in the Santa Monica area, they had UFO sightings.
Oh.
And it turned out to be, it's strange lights in the sky. Oh, it's just the Red Bull skydiving team. So if you see a UFO, you know, don't freak out. It could just be these guys. And if something comes into your house and you have like an abduction experience,
right,
like we've experienced, like we discussed previously, try to look at their legs and see if there's webbing.
Right.
Them.
Yeah. And it's not Bobby Brown, by the way.
Not Bobby Brown.
Yeah. But I do think that's kind of funny. I mean, you think about it, like, you know, an octogenarian with not such good eyesight looking up in the air and seeing what looks to be like these flying squirrels coming at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, if you think of a flying squirrel, you're imagining the suit
you know,
pretty spot on because it's all about creating an airfoil, and so it's like webbing under the arm and between the legs. And so you spread your arms, you tuck your head. Oh, I better not tuck my head away from the mic. You tuck your head.
You're getting some air right now.
Down. Yeah. And you spread your legs and you create this airfoil so you can, you know, generate some lift. Now you can't get enough. It's not enough to, you're still going to, you're still kind of falling. I mean, you're descending anyway. You can't really ascend in this kind of suit. But you can steer, you can glide around just by moving your legs. The airfoil itself, it's pretty brilliant because if you look back in parachuting history, like the first parachute jump from an airplane was 1912, which was just 9 years after the Wright brothers.
Right.
So, you know, we were on this pretty quick. It's like, whoa, this is great. We can fly, but can we jump out of it?
Yeah. Right.
So, you had a lot of people back then, they were trying to incorporate wings into their design because they're trying to come up with ways to steer and, you know, the dream of human flight without the aid of this airplane is just, I mean, it's older than the idea of the airplane, really. You look back to, you know, the myths of Icarus and Daedalus and all that.
Or even looking at Da Vinci's drawings, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it really predates the idea of creating a flying machine.
Mm-hmm.
But of the 75 original pioneering birdmen, 72 died testing their new designs and techniques between 1930 and 1961. Because you throw these different wings on, and suddenly you have just like extra limbs that can become entangled in the chute. Or you jump out and then you go to check your pocket watch, and then bam, you go into a spin because you have a wing out here on the side of your arm. So the wingsuits, though, they solve a lot of this in a really neat way because you don't have, like, the wings are you. They're not wings tacked onto you.
Right.
And the membranes inflate when you jump out because the air rushing up towards you, like, goes into these chambers and it kind of inflates you to a certain degree. I mean, you can still move and all, but it gives it kind of it gives it more of a structure. And so it's not just like, you know, some loose webbing underneath the arm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty nuts, though, I have to say. I think that's a speed freak thing.
Yeah, and if you're interested in doing it, just keep in mind that you're going to... you can wear one to work like I'm doing. It's, you know, no problem.
Sure.
It's just, you know,
just to be careful when the train comes when you're on the platform.
Exactly,
right?
Because that train breeze will catch you, believe me. But it's recommended you have 500 jump, traditional skydiving jumps, under your belt before you even strap on a beginner wingsuit. And those will cost you around $600, last estimate I looked at. And if you get an advanced model, you're looking at well over twice that in some cases.
So, some experience probably and as well as an understanding of basic physics probably helps a lot in terms of surviving your fun experience.
Exactly. So yeah, it is an advanced skydiving technique. So that really has to be stressed. It's an advanced technique. So don't try and build one on your own.
No. Kids don't do that in your backyard there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's another really cool way that we're using accessories, I suppose you could call them, which is neural prosthetic devices.
Okay.
Okay. So the cool thing about this is that these devices use neural implants consisting of an array of electrodes that are implanted in the brain to monitor a small set of neurons.
Okay. And now this is related to our nervous system.
Exactly.
Spread throughout the body.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so if you think about the brain as an electrical device, mm-hmm. and electricity is a common language. So that's what allows us to interface the brain to these electronic devices. So it detects an individual's intentions to maneuver an object, such as a prosthetic limb. And I'm thinking about the bionic arm, which allows you to basically say, you know, a quick command like move fingers here.
Right.
Or go there. And then it basically takes that signal and allows your hand to move, which is incredible if you think about it, especially if you've lost a limb. You know, it can be used in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really incredible. It seems like the ones I've seen, you know, schematics of, it's kind of like a little, you see, it's like a little metal plate in the interior of the device.
Yeah.
Kind of like this kind of a sensor.
Yeah. And in fact, they tested it on a monkey, of course.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So of course there was a monkey with a bionic arm.
I'm just going to assume that monkey lost that arm naturally. I'm not even going to tarnish my brain with any other possibilities.
You know, I can't remember right offhand, but and maybe this is my brain creating a cover memory because I was traumatized by that myself. But I want to say that they actually just strapped it on top of the arm.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which does. It means doesn't make it any freakier looking.
Yeah.
Right. But again, that might be a cover memory that I just created.
Still, the end result, monkey with a mechanical arm.
There you go. That's progress right there. But it actually is progress because ultimately it can help out a lot of people.
Yeah. Even if they did just have to saw off a monkey's arm. It's like, you know, the fact that you can help all these people that have lost a limb, is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was reading too that, I mean, it's so fascinating that you can take the neural code and break it down like that. And now that we have figured out the genome, you know, what can we do? How can we apply that to the way that we're operating with prosthetics?
Oh, you know,
is there a deeper way, I guess, to embed the information so that it's coming to us in a much more complex fashion?
So are you getting into the area here where you're talking about not just simply having a machine replacement to feed off of existing neural points, but to potentially create new neural points?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And enhance, not just replace, but enhance mm-hmm. what we can already do. So I guess it's sort of like moving toward the bionic man.
Yeah. Or like creating, say, like something, like if you see people that run with their iPod or their MP3 player, like strapped to their shoulder. Like, so what if they had a neural connection there?
A neural docking station?
Yeah. So if they don't like the song that's playing, they can just skip to the next track by, like, you know, just thinking about apples or something.
Man, I have to say that that is something that I would probably go under the knife for. That's pretty cool. I know. Seriously, though, have you ever sat there and thought, oh, God, I don't want to get up and change the iPod, or I'm so lazy that I can't even pick up this remote? No, you haven't.
Well, yeah, sometimes I guess. Yeah.
You haven't. Yeah. Just admit it. But that's pretty cool. And then there's, along that same sort of idea of improving upon what we already have, is something called the carbon nanotube muscles.
Okay.
This is really cool. It's basically a next generation muscle made out of carbon nanotubes. And so, you know, carbon nanotubes are about 100,000 times thinner than human hair. They're super light and they're stronger than steel. And carbon nanotubes, when they contract at 300% per second, that think about the human muscle, which contracts at around 20% per second. So all of a sudden you have this ability for super crazy strength if you can apply this to artificial limbs.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a guy named Ray Bowman who has produced a formulation that's stronger than steel, actually. And it's light as air, and it's more flexible than rubber. And in addition to being used in artificial limbs, it can be used to make smart skins, which are these shape-changing structures, mm-hmm. which shape-shifting, it's like my favorite thing. That's pretty cool. And ultra-strong robots. But in the immediate future, it's just going to be good for highly efficient solar cells.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Yeah, nanotubes are one of those things where it's like, if you look at any kind of contemplation of advanced structural technology, mm-hmm. nanotubes tend to show up.
Yeah, almost everything is predicated on that.
Yeah, everything from space elevators to solar sails, they're frequently cited.
Right, and they're being used. I mean, that's the amazing thing is that, okay, maybe this one guy is playing around with them right now, but that translates to them being used pretty in a widespread way in like 20 years.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the limbs you're talking about is I'm, of course, you instantly think of like super power grip where you're just like crushing everything in sight.
Right.
But the key here, seems to me, is also speed. I mean, you see some of the, in many cases, outdated examples of mechanized prosthetic limbs.
Yeah.
And you see kind of like a slow robotic kind of thing going on, right?
Right.
Because it has to depend on hydraulics. Or even kind of just sort of puppetry type devices, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had these nanotubes, we would have this the speed of reaction, you'd be able to downplay it. So it wouldn't be a situation of like please don't touch anything because you will crush everything that you love. It would be more like there would be a controlled system where it's like yes, go ahead and touch the apple. It's going to be more of a lifelike maneuver and graspability.
Right. But, I mean, would it also stand to reason that you could also accelerate yourself?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, would guess so if
that.
There was a reason to. But it's like, I was thinking like, okay, you could make legs. So you could do
right.
like super jumping abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But then that seems extraordinarily dangerous. So I don't know how useful that is.
It could be. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of contemplation that needs to go on here.
Yeah.
Before it starts to be released to mass audience, I believe.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
I don't know if you knew this. The carbon nanotube infused steel was thought to be used to make Damascus blades, which is history's sharpest sword.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And the technique has been lost, but when they actually looked at the swords, they found that carbon nanotubes and nanowires were used in a sample of a 17th century sword forged from Damascus steel.
Wow, I did not know that. That's pretty incredible.
But I mean, I think that was sort of an accident of science, you know, back in the day. But it's really interesting to find out that that was used in this material.
Yeah, and especially interesting when you look at the Damascus space elevators of the day. Those were pretty. No, I'm
sorry. Oh, those were. Yeah, I mean, they were an elegant interpretation of that. Absolutely.
So what accessory item do we have next here on the list?
Ooh, exoskeletons,
ooh.
Which, again, you can carbon nanotubes eventually could be used with us.
Yeah. And, of course, the great thing about, exoskeletons, if you're a guy and you're into sci-fi at all, then you're just probably in love with the idea of exoskeletons because they're everywhere. I mean, it's back to, Starship Troopers, the novel, to stuff like the whole Warhammer 40,000 world with all these mechanized power armor that these guys are wearing to do all sorts of amazing things, or even like Aliens where you have Ripley fighting.
Because I was just thinking about her stepping into her exoskeleton suit.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's like it's another one of these things that it's just we just can't get enough of the idea that you could strap on this armor that would just make you a superhuman.
Right, and it's here.
Yeah.
It's in existence.
Yeah.
Lockheed Martin has actually developed it. And it's been dubbed the Hulk, which is Human Universal Load Carrier.
I love how they claim that that the Hulk thing is just accidental.
Yeah.
They're like, are you trying to tell me that there's a comic book character that's green and has super, we had no idea. What a weird coincidence.
No. You know that they put like together a think tank for that in Dubai somewhere. And 20 hours later, they came out with Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. though the suit weighs 82 pounds, purportedly when a soldier is strapped in, they don't feel that weight.
Mm-hmm.
They feel virtually nothing when it comes to that. And then it allows the wearer to effortlessly lift 200 pounds. But this is pretty cool, too, because it can also be accessorized with missile launchers or even a steel shield capable of stopping munitions dead in their tracks.
See, this is just straight-up Space Marine stuff.
I know. Yeah. And it's here, again. I'm pretty excited about it. Most of the models use a hydraulic system, which is controlled by an onboard computer. And just in case you're wondering, like, well, you know, what's the power source? It's a 18-pound battery, and it's a lithium ion battery, I believe. Excuse me, a lithium one. Mm-hmm. And it lasts for 3 to 4 days, and it can be recharged using a Humvee, just in case you're worried about that.
Okay.
Yeah. And right now they're testing them. Actually, they'll be testing them in the spring, 2011, on real soldiers in the military, and then they'll be using them in Afghanistan. So they should complete their tests by about 2015 and then introduce them to the market and the mass market, commercial market. And just in case you're interested, it's around like $25,000 per suit. You probably want to get a backup one.
Okay, yeah. And make sure you have Humvees parked everywhere you could conceivably need.
Exactly.
One. Because when one of these suits powers down, that's the thing. It's like you're kind of in this big tomb, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, too, is that one of those things that you buy and then it powers down and you get it, never really get around to booting it back up?
Yeah, it's
and,
like having an iPhone.
Yeah. I was thinking it would just sit in your closet. Mm-hmm. Oh, there goes that exosuit again. Oh, I should really power it up.
Another really interesting one out there, because a number of different people are working on different variations of the exoskeleton. There's a one that comes out from that Honda has been working on, the Hondo exoskeleton legs. And these are pretty awesome because it looks basically like a bicycle seat with a belt and like robotic leg braces that go down to shoes. And so you kind of end up looking like, you have to look up a picture of this, because you kind of end up looking like you have mecha legs and like mecha groin in this, because the bicycle seat thing kind of like, you know, comes up and cups you on both sides. It kind of, what's the...
Did you say it cups you on both sides?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of looks like a weird cod piece in the front.
Okay.
So you see these, you know, wonderful demonstrations by, you know, these very, very nice, polite looking Japanese scientists and massive cod piece and robotic legs. It's pretty awesome. But this would come in like different sizes and would weigh about 14.3 pounds. And again, lithium ion battery. And in this particular exoskeleton, you'd be able to walk like 2.8 miles per hour for about 2 hours without having to worry about charging it.
That's not bad if you want to take a stroll.
Yeah. And then there's the MIT exoskeleton. And again, this is another one that's very similar to some of the other things we're looking at. The prototypes I was researching, they have it's one of these things where you have legs that are braced and then kind of a back area. And so the idea is not as much to, like, you're not providing, like, oh, I can walk forever because my legs are robots, or, you know, I have super, you know, strength for kicking the enemy. It's about supporting a massive payload on your back without feeling it. It's like transferring the weight through these robotic exoskeleton legs to the ground.
Okay, so every time I move into a new house, this is the thing that I want to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really cool. And then when we were talking earlier about like shield attachments and missile attachments, it's like, that's just like, just straight up like kind of a sci-fi vision. And it's easy to get caught up in that. But this is more like sort of practical area. It's like, if you need a guy to carry a whole lot of stuff, you know, this is a way to do it.
Now, is this the one that you were saying that they might end up renting, or it's not necessarily something that you have to buy, but?
I think the Japanese models are the ones that they're talking about making available to the public for rental.
Okay, so I could go to Home Depot and rent this.
Whatever Home Depot is
or
in
Lowe's.
Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Then there's another one, also in Japan, though, while we're on the subject, from Japan, Cyberdyne, which Cyberdyne, for those of you who are film buffs, this was the name of the company that built the Skynet system in the Terminator films. So, you know, the Japanese have such a more optimistic view of a robotic future than it seems like everybody else. So they just happily named their company Cyberdyne. And they named their exoskeleton system the HAL exoskeleton, as in the robot that goes berserk in 2001.
Wow.
So it's, robot suit hybrid assistive limb, or HAL exoskeleton.
Yeah, that doesn't inspire confidence in me.
Yeah, though they have a lot of, they do have a lot of, like, cooler ideas in mind for how this would be used. They think it would be used to train doctors, to help in physical therapy, as people, you know, regain use of their limbs, you know, assist disabled people. This is an idea you also see in New Zealand's Rex exoskeleton, which, again, Rex. I just refuse to believe that they're not coming up with these first. But the idea is, like, you know, instead of somebody being confined to a wheelchair, or an exoskeleton system would give them the liberty to walk around like, you know, as if they still had the use of their legs, which is pretty cool. But also Cyberdyne is looking at ways that would allow laborers to carry heavier loads and to aid in emergency rescues.
So pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I have something to do at lunch. I need to actually run over to the Y. Try out my Fin.
Yeah. How many laps do you have to do to get a decent workout when you're super powered, though?
Oh, just like 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna dominate the lane for a couple of hours.
Yeah. If anybody gets in there, just bottlenose them. They'll get out.
Yeah. I'm gonna let the staff know there.
So, hey, we have a couple of listener mail items here. Shall I look at them?
Please do.
Okay. Let me see if I can reach them in this suit.
Oh, watch out. You just got hooked on.
Okay, oh, God. All right. I got it. Right. Okay. This one comes to us from a listener by the name of Jen. And she addresses you, actually. She says, I recently found it interesting through the episodes that Julie mentions a vomitorium and says that Romans would eat until they vomited and then eat more. I'm not sure if that was ever a cultural Roman thing or not, but the vomitorium was actually something completely different. A vomitorium was an archway of a Roman theater, such as the Colosseum, where the people would enter or leave. It's called a vomitorium because of the way it looked when crowds of people would swarm out of the door, like the building was vomiting people, I guess.
She's 100% right. And I was actually referring to sharks. I think we were talking, that was the Inside Out podcast, and we were talking about sharks emptying their stomachs. Mm-hmm. And I think I likened it to a vomitorium. And later on, we were doing some reading for Pyroclastic Flow and actually came on that fact. So thank you, Jen, for pointing that out. It's absolutely right. Do I wish that there was a vomitorium? I'm not going to lie. You know, yes, I've always thought it was really cool that you could stuff yourself so horribly and then go vomit, and then there would be a lute player there to cover up the sound of you vomiting, or me vomiting, I guess I should say. But no, you're right, and I guess this is another thing we're hanging on the Romans, right?
Yeah. I don't understand why you have to be so down on the Roman Empire. They did a lot of great things.
I know, but I like to think of them as hedonists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freewheeling.
Well, cool. Well, we have one more bit of listener mail here from. Speaking of Romans, this one is apparently from a listener by the name of Boudica, who was, of course, the warrior queen that was, I believe her people were crushed by the Romans at one point.
Yes.
We'd have to ask the history gals about this because it was also an Anya track, as I recall. So there, back from my Anya listening days.
I see.
But anyway, Boudica.
That was my little Anya.
Was it?
Ode to you, yeah.
Boudica writes, I believe you mistitled the podcast. You titled the podcast, quote, if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? However, the way I have always heard it is, if a tree falls and no one is able to hear it, does it make a sound? And she's correct. This is the full version of it, because otherwise it loses its philosophical punch if you omit those words. But I believe we had to omit some of the words to fit it into the podcast title.
Yeah.
Because we were going to call one of our episodes, You're So Vain, You Probably Think This Universe Is About You. But then Ben Bolin told us we had to shorten it.
That's right.
Yeah,
Ben.
Such a killjoy.
Yeah. But it's good that we got the email, because that we knew that our tree had fallen in the forest via your emails. So keep them coming, please.
Yes. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us on both of those as Blow the Mind. We post all sorts of interesting stuff there, and feel free to interact with us. Let us know what's blowing your mind. If you find a cool piece of news or research on the net, you know, shoot it to us, because we may not have seen it otherwise.
That's right. And let us know if there are any really cool superhuman things that you've found out about lately, and email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.